You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 100. I am doing everything I can to not scream into the microphone, but holy shit, did we make it to 100. Damn, it's a big day. I'm excited. And it's funny because we just passed our two-year anniversary, but for some reason, episode 100 seems to have more significance in my mind. And we've got some exciting announcements that we've been teasing for quite a while. So we'll be getting to those. But we have a special guest on the show. Vanana joins us once again. Vanessa, how's it going, girl?
Woohoo! Congratulations on 100, guys.
Thank you.
It's stoked. Going good. You know, as well as it can be, I'm sure.
Happy to
be here.
Awesome.
So we got a couple things, Aaron, though, first before we do anything. One is that, you know, we do want to let everyone know to stay tuned to the end, because we are going to have a special announcement regarding the future of the podcast, the end of the show. The other thing is, if anything weird happens, Aaron basically is having like a maximum overdrive situation right now. Like, his computer is taken over and it does whatever it feels like right now. So if you hear wacky things going on right now, it's Aaron's computer in rebellion mode.
If I have marbles in my mouth, it's because of my brand new MacBook Pro. So I'm going to do my best to keep it at bay, but so if I sound slightly subdued
or you vanish at any point,
or I vanish or whatever, you just blame the MacBook.
And if no one's hears from Aaron in 2 hours, please alert the authorities, because that computer is doing whatever it feels like right now.
Oh man, I picked quite an episode of the trial of a brand new computer. Meanwhile, On the flip side, like, my cat, I don't know what the hell's going on with him, but we've recorded 100 episodes, and this is the first one where he's, like, all in my face right now. So he's excited, which is a little weird. Here we go.
Right. All right. So we have a lot of, like, theater-related stuff, like movie openings and theater news and stuff, and it's been something we've been talking about now for the last few weeks because of everything going on in the world. And you know, it's interesting, last week we started off talking about Tenet and Mulan being the first of like the real major studio films like that were going to be set to release, and I had talked about how it was interesting that Tenet was set to release July 17th, and that most theaters around the country and around the world in most cases are set to be open by that date. I said, but New York City was at the time scheduled to enter Phase 4 on July 20th, which would be after Tenet would have been open. So, and we wondered, like, would they push it back? You know, would they try to avoid that? Because New York City is, you know, one of your major markets, right? So you don't really want to lose out on that. And sure enough, like the next day, of course, because that's what always happens with us, they announced that they did, in fact, move Tenet from July 17th to July 31st. Mm-hmm. So that would, in theory, clear... you know, by then, they say by the 24th of July, they expect almost all the theaters to be open. However, there's another wrinkle in this now, as it was announced today, that New York City is now no longer guaranteed to enter Phase 2 June 22nd, which would be this coming Monday from the time that we're recording this. And that's significant because if it doesn't, then that means that there's a chance that New York City theaters still may not be opened even by July 31st, definitely by July 24th when Mulan opens. So this causes a whole different thing. Now, there's still a chance that New York City enters phase two on June 22nd. But right now they're saying it could be anywhere between June 22nd and the first like week of July. And that makes a big difference because they're going by a minimum of 2 week intervals here in New York City or in New York State in general, but New York City specifically now because of the fact that we're behind everybody else in the state. And so if it's a minimum of 2 weeks and a maximum of like whatever, basically, just pushing it back, pushing phase two back a couple of weeks, unless they accelerate phases three and four, means that that messes with your theater opening situation. So this is still a very fluid situation going on right now. And I think the best move was what happened with Wonder Woman, where they moved it to October 2nd. From right. August 14th or whatever the original day was, because that should be good to go. So, and I think that's probably the best thing. These studios that are trying to play, you know, games here where they're trying to just nail it perfectly, you never know. Because a lot of things can change.
Well, the interesting thing, too, is that there was a story that dropped today, actually, on the Hollywood Reporter. And they were saying that New York City and L.A. are eyeing theater reopenings in July.
Right. Well, that would have been the normal. Well, July 10th would have been early for New York City, but.
I mean, that's what it's saying.
Yeah, because if you look at it, I mean, I don't want to bore people with New York City coronavirus phase information. But the reality is New York City entered phase one on June 8th. And now it is. It's a 2 week analysis. They analyze data for 2 weeks.
Right.
And then, so that would set phase two at the earliest would be June 22nd. So that would mean if New York entered phase two on June 22nd, and then each phase after that happened exactly at the 2 week mark, July 20th would be phase four, which is movie theaters. It's all large gathering attractions, right? Would be in phase four. It's why Broadway isn't opening till after Labor Day.
I agree with you, Chris.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I mean, they're just extending it by 14 days exactly, right?
Yep.
Why wouldn't they do what Wonder Woman did, which is let's just shoot it out a couple of months? I wonder what was their frame of thinking of let's do it 14 days. After, you know, it's still the same month. It's from the 17th to the 31st.
I think they're running out of days.
Yeah, that's very possible.
They're trying to give their releases enough time to breathe before they throw another one in the theaters. And then there's the competition. So I talked a little bit about this, I think maybe a couple episodes back, where we were speculating that if Wonder Woman got bumped, it wouldn't push into the November time period because it would be right up against Black Widow. Mean, it makes sense why they would pick the October date, and then you've got, you know, maybe a solid, I don't even remember what the release date was for for Black Widow, but it is in November, and so it gives you know, some ample time, I'd say, for Wonder Woman to kind of kick off the races.
I kind of feel like they're trying to ride a wave that isn't really there. You know, I think they wanted to be the first movie that moviegoers can go to. And because of that impact, that it was the first thing that people would be exposed to in a movie theater, I think they were trying to ride that sensationalism without really thinking how unpredictable that can be because of different states. And New York, obviously, because New York City, because of our population, is going to bring in a lot of ticket sales compared to a smaller like town or city. But I think they're thinking behind it. I could be totally wrong, you know, but I have a feeling they wanted to be the one that kind of like the hero that kind of like saves the day, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a big part of it. I think that there was a battle there. You want to be one of there's an enviable position to be in, and I think we mentioned this last week how we said like all of a sudden they just kind of lucked into being in that enviable position of being like the first movies that are gonna be available, that are gonna be out in theaters when theaters open up, even in a limited capacity. It's just that again and. You know, without like the number one market in the country, as far as media and everything goes, it's going to be difficult. And I think they realize that. And that's why they moved it from July 17th to the 31st, because then you're, by doing that, you're also now allowing Mulan to be the first, right, of the major movies. So, but they clearly had that something in mind, because they figured, well, that 2 weeks will probably give us enough room. Although, and look, I'm hoping that New York, it's still early. It's Tuesday, June 16th, as we record this. So I'm hoping that New York will be in a position to start phase two on the 22nd of June. But now that they're throwing out there the possibility that it may not, or it's not a guarantee, now all of a sudden you start to say, well, what if it doesn't happen? Now there could be a little bit of an issue. But I guess at some point you just have to release your movie. You know, you can't just keep moving the date over and over again. I mean, you just got to stick with it and say, look, it is what it is. And you know what? Maybe we'll just have it in drive-thrus in New York City area if that's the case. So we'll do whatever we have to do because we'll catch up. Maybe the audience, I mean, it's not like there's a ton of stuff coming out in August, especially now, right? Now that Wonder Woman is out of August and into October, you know, you do have some catch-up time there. You have August for people who may be in New York City. If they don't get to see it opening weekend, they'll still, when the theaters do open here in New York City, whenever that is, they're going to want something to go to see. And you know, Tenet will still be there. So that's probably part of the thinking, too. And that was also the thinking of moving, you know, the same studio, moving both movies. They probably figured, you know, let's allow ourselves that little bit of a safety net. Let's not move Tenet to the 31st and then 2 weeks later have Wonder Woman coming out, just in case. Let's use that room.
And there, well, in the studio, go ahead, Vanessa.
I was gonna say, just New York aside, I think New York is in a bubble very similar to Los Angeles, and I wonder how the rest of the country will fare in terms of movie going attendance.
So that's a good point. And one of the things that I was just reading that Warner Brothers is doing to kind of whet the appetites of folks, you know, interested in seeing Tenet, is they're going to re-release Inception for its 10th year anniversary in the place that Tenet was in. So Tenet was supposed to come out July 17th.
Yep.
And they'll be putting Inception there, which I'm like, awesome. It's like my favorite movie ever. I love Inception. So I think we're going to see some studios potentially exploring those kinds of options where they're going to be testing the waters with, you know, re-releases of films, which makes sense. But, you know, interestingly enough, I think, you know, Warner Brothers was kind of late to the party in terms of shuffling some of their movies, with the exception of Wonder Woman 84, which was like the big one for them, at least the one that was on everyone's radar. But they moved their whole slate shifted from 2021 into 2022. So films like Godzilla vs. Kong, which was already delayed from March to November, just got pushed to May of 2021.
Yes, and it took the date of the Matrix 4, a movie we talked about last week.
Right. Which just got pushed to 2022.
Yeah, a whole year almost. It got pushed from May 21st, 2021 to April 1st, 2022.
Yeah. So
that sucks. I just watched all three of those movies back to back the other night.
Wow. Yeah. What did you think?
You know what? In the lens of the pandemic, I experienced the movie differently now than I did when I watched it, obviously, when I was way younger. The way technology and us against machines, I don't know. I was like, wow, the Wachowski brothers at that time, they were really ahead of their time. It really affected me this time around. I have to say, it really made a bigger impact on me now than it did, because when I was younger and I watched it, it was just cool, right? I feel like I took everything for granted before. Mm-hmm. It was just cool and edgy and like, oh, I understand the ideas, but I kind of feel like now when I watched it, it's closer to our future maybe than we think. I don't know. But it was awesome. And then I went down like some threads and stuff like that about duality and, you know, how Neo needed to exist with Mr. Smith and how they were just packaged together. And I just started thinking about all those like duality terms and got really geeked out over it. And it was really fun.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about this last week, but I'm definitely looking forward to the Matrix 4 and what we catch you up. We talked about how it is going to address some of the things that are happening in our world now. So I'm interested to see. And now they've got lots of time to sit on it and bake it. So
yeah.
That better be one of the best effing movies of 2022. Seriously. But anyways, I digress. So Warner Brothers, their slate has been reset. We'll see if there's any further changes as things, you know, I guess continue to find their place and then get disturbed again.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing, though, too, a big reason, I think, why a lot of studios just bailed out of this year altogether, like pretty early on in the process, because I don't think anybody wanted to deal with this. Like, you have to still market movies and, you know, like it just makes things messy.
Yeah,
you know, when you have to keep moving dates and there's confusion. I mean, the one thing that's going to, I think, be a little bit of a saving grace is the fact that there's not going to be this oversaturation of movies. So it is going to be easy to find these movies. Like, it's going to be the movie that's playing in your theater, basically, at that time. You know, there's not going to be a lot of stuff out. So I think that helps a little bit. But it's going to be pretty interesting to see. I mean, you know, Ron Diesel asked an interesting question. He said, is it too early to say that the summer movie season as we know it is officially done? Or is it too early to tell when we still have time between now and August with movies being released to their new dates?
Bro, we are in the summer.
Yeah, summer movie season is done.
It's over.
Yeah, it there isn't one, basically. I mean, when you're talking about the first movies, like of what would be the summer movie season coming out at the end of July. And then, I mean, really there's not a lot coming out at that point. Right. So it's those Mulan and Tenet, and then you're going to have, really not much happening for a couple months, and then you're going to be in the fall. So, yeah, I mean, there is no summer at this point. I think the idea of like movie seasons, I think that idea was starting to kind of go away a little bit over time anyway. I think that, you know, we've seen now where you're starting to release big films now in February and March, right? You're starting to see big movies being released in August, September, October. These are times of the year when you never saw big movies released. So that's where the idea of like the summer movie season, the holiday movie season, like, yes, it's obviously based on the time of year, but it was more than that. Like, the reason why we had a summer movie season was because that's when studios saved a lot of their big, mostly popcorn films, like to release, because kids were out of school and your audience potentially was bigger and stuff like that. But now we're seeing that people will go to movies all year round if the movie is worth it and marketed correct. So I don't even think that the idea of like the seasons matters anymore. But this year, especially, it doesn't.
Technically, the quote unquote summer blockbuster season opened up in April. Right. So,
well, it did now. That's what I mean. It didn't used to. It started Memorial Day before. Then it became beginning of May. Now it's April. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like the highest grossing film of all time was released in April.
Yeah.
Right? There you go. I think we're to your point, Chris, I think that there is certainly going to be a decline in terms of the seasonality of films and You know, and now with like VOD on fire, you know, this essentially, we'll see how it all, you know, happens. I mean, you're going to get your family films all year round, right? Anything that's themed to, you know, probably the holidays makes the most sense, right? That's probably the one that sticks closest to, like that after Thanksgiving into the, you know, Christmas season. But even horror films that you'd expect to be dropping in September, October are dropping in like March and April.
Yeah. Yeah, everything's so all over the place. And you're seeing now, I think, studios doing more like targeted releasing as opposed to like, well, this is a big movie, it'll be in the summer. Or this is a, like an Oscar contender, we'll do it in the holidays. Like now you're seeing like what we saw with Black Panther, what we saw with Captain Marvel, like what we're seeing with a lot of films. Like you're seeing like targeted release dates where it's like they're either releasing it around at a time of year that's maybe applicable to the theme of the film.
Right.
Or the audience that they're going for, or you're right. seeing like, well, you know, why release a movie in the middle of a time of year where there's so many movies coming out one after another, like every week, rather than like, let's get a head start. So let's release it at the end of April. We'll call it the summer movie season, like things like that, that you're, and also with studios cranking out so much product, like studios like Warner Brothers or, you know, Marvel or Disney, whatever, like they also have to be careful they're not running into themselves, like their own movies. So that's a thing too. Like just to space out your year sometimes, if you have like three or four or major films coming out in the course of a year, like you need to spread them out as well. So there's thought that has to go into that too. So maybe your family film becomes your summer movie release because the kids are out of school. And your bigger action films that may have been a summer release in a normal year become now slightly before the summer or slightly after the summer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Time will tell.
Yes, it will. Talking about the, you just mentioned though, the VOD and everything becoming a big deal. Mm-hmm. I was reading this article. So this King of Staten Island movie, it's the Judd Apatow, Pete Davidson. Yeah, I'm thinking I got Avengers on my mind. The Joss Whedon film. No, it's the Judd Apatow movie with Pete Davidson that released to video on demand. And I was reading that apparently they had booked it to run in like 100 drive-in theaters and they just pulled it from the drive-in theaters 2 days before it was supposed to premiere at the drive-ins. And the drive-in owners are pissed about it, rightfully so, because apparently the studio said, we planned for this to be solely a video on demand release. And I guess somebody at the studio didn't get the memo and went out on their own and booked like 100 drive-in theaters. And now they were selling tickets for it and everything. And now they yanked it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to watch that movie the other night, but I really did not want to pay $20 for it.
Yeah, same.
Yep. And it wasn't that I was going, like, I wanted to watch it. I was being overruled in the conversation. My wife was like, oh, we're going to watch this. And I was like, wait, what do you mean? And she's like, it's got that famous Boston dude you like in there, that redheaded guy. I'm like, Bill Burr? And she's like, yeah, that guy. And then she looks at it and it's like $20. I'm like, girl, you better not push that button. Push that button. And we're not paying for that. If I didn't buy Trolls, I ain't buying this shit.
Yeah.
We had exactly the same conversation. We're like, yeah, let's watch that movie. Let's watch it. Okay, it's between this one and this one. It's between this one and this one. All right, let's just watch this one. And then we got to it and we're like, $19.99? No way.
Yeah.
Pete Davidson and like some whack ass tattoos on his body. You know,
I had the same reaction. Like I was like, well, this looks interesting. Let me see. But then once I saw it was $20, which doesn't surprise me because that's what, for the most part, what they've been going for. Sure. But I don't want to sound like a broken record. I mean, we've mentioned this before, but like, I just feel like there's, and I don't know what the numbers are like at this point on this movie, but I feel like this is that type of movie that was tailor made for like a lower price point.
Like $5.99.
Well, maybe not that low.
Yeah, but you know what though?
Even
you know
$10.
Though? I would have gone to see this movie in the movie theaters if it was a night out with Yeah, if it was like a night out with friends and like we had dinner, and I would have probably ended up spending $200 that night because you're including dinner and tickets and whatever, but you're going for just a night out for that whole experience, so I guess you're paying for it. When you're in your house that you've been quarantined in for months, you don't want to spend those $20, you know, because you're not getting a new experience out of it. You're in the same four walls that you've been in for some of us in New York, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's why I didn't want to spend the $20, because I knew I was just I wasn't going to get anything extra.
Yeah.
But I might have spent more money if let's say they extended the release till, you know, late July, or like Tenet or any of the other films, maybe people would opt for a comedy or a lighthearted movie instead of something so serious.
I know who Pete Davidson is.
No, okay.
I do, you know, like vaguely. I don't really find him to be that funny, so like Bill Burr was gonna get it for me. But either way, I'm like, I ain't paying that money for that dude. Either way, like I wouldn't have gone to the theater to see it either. See, I think $20 is like the blockbuster film, the film that everyone wants to go see. Like,
yes,
you know, the cultural moment. Those are the movies that I think can get away with the $20. Films like this, where they feel, you know, like the budget's super low, like it's a B movie.
So like $5.99.
I said $5.99, but I could see maybe $10.99.
Yeah, $9.99. Okay. I think that's your price point for this. Yeah.
I like Pete Davidson. I have a soft spot for him. He's been through a lot of stuff, and I like him.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's like someone you gotta cuddle and say everything's gonna be okay.
That sounds like something Aaron would definitely do.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I feel like no doubt that's going through his mind.
Here, nuzzle here.
Yeah.
Gotcha, buddy.
I think what Vanessa, what you said before, I think was interesting, because it's a perspective that we haven't really talked about here when we've talked about theaters and video on demand versus the theater experience. Because we've been talking about it in terms of like the theater experience, right? The big screen, the sound, the thing, versus like being at home and the conveniences that come with being at home and all of that, and weighing it that way. What you just mentioned is this whole as a new concept, which is the idea of like the being at home versus not necessarily the theater experience, but like the night out experience. Yeah, like the whole idea of like, well, it's something I would do with my friends, and we would go to dinner and we would make it. And that happens to be the movie that, you know, would be out that we would go see as part of our like outing. That's interesting because, you know, we're just so stuck in this whole idea of like that the debate here is like big screen, you know, big sound versus like home theater and all that stuff. But really, and I guess it's more relevant now because of all the lockdowns, but like the idea of just like being out, a night out, going out, a day out, whatever, like that whole experience being worth the price of a ticket, as opposed to just like, I'm not going to pay. It's one thing to pay $20 to leave my house and go hang out and do something social with my friends. Another thing to pay $20 to sit on this couch that I've been sitting on for the last 3 months, like without moving. That's interesting. And it does add a new wrinkle to the whole idea of, you know, how will video on demand affect the theater experience? And I think maybe now in thinking of it from that perspective, like that might be the saving grace for theaters right now. You know, the fact that people have been locked down, because I do think that people are ready. Like there was a time where people were going to embrace the video on demand thing at home because we were home. You had no choice. So it was a great time to test that out. But maybe now the fact that people are going to want any excuse to get out and experience life, maybe that helps theaters out a little bit, at least in the short term. Yeah.
It's a social output. Right? It's a connection with your fellow human beings and actually socializing and doing stuff outside of, like, you know, to your point, just staying home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it makes total sense.
You hit the nail on the head with that statement, because I would go to the movies now just to make a point that I can go and just to experience it, because it's like a breath of fresh air, right? And because we miss socializing so much.
Yeah.
Well, I guess then then that depends on the individual, you know.
Yeah.
But secondly, though, I would have to say the second point is, if you've never seen a movie in Dolby Vision or Dolby Atmos, that's a reason to go to see a movie in the theaters.
Right.
Because that technology is freaking amazing. And once I experienced that technology, I was blown away what experiencing movies could be, because I used to think, oh, well, I can just wait. If it's not like Aaron was saying, like, $20 is not worth it for Pete Davidson, right? So if I felt like that about a certain movie or a certain actor, but I kind of wanted to see the movie because of other people, or it was directed by Judd Apatow, for example, but I could wait till DVD release, then sure. But there are movies out there where it really serves you to see it in the theaters. And after I saw certain movies and within that technology, I was blown away. And that's why I would go see movies in theaters and would actually like fight for their importance in that sort of world. But then on the other hand, I would go see any movie right now, King of Staten Island, just because I can.
Right. And that's kind of where I was going. So, like, yeah. I think that the Dolby Atmos thing and the Dolby Vision, all that stuff, like, that ties in, though, to, like, what I was saying with the theater experience. That, for me, is more about, like, your Star Wars movie or your Avengers film or your, you know, your big, like, you know, Aquaman, something like that, that you want to – it's a visual thing, sight, sound, all that stuff. But, like, I mean, I don't know that a movie like King of Staten Island necessarily gets anybody excited in Dolby Vision or anything like that, but that's where the other point comes into play. Like, so the idea being, like, with theater owners, their whole thing now is like, how do we get people to come to the theater? So things like Atmos and Dolby Vision and stuff like that, that's a way, right? It's an enhancement. IMAX, all that stuff is an enhancement to get people. It's something you can't replicate at home, really. You can try, but it's not quite the same. But for a movie like a smaller film that doesn't necessarily benefit from all of that, the lure for, I think, for now is just going to be people wanting to get out of the house. And that's why I think that, you know, if you're going to do this video on demand stuff, you do have to have different price points. You know, I mean, I think that it doesn't make sense that everything across the board is $20. I mean, I understand that that's kind of what a movie ticket would be, but, you know, at the same time, like, look, we're three people right now that two of us who said we wouldn't have gone to the theater to see this movie, right, and pay the $20 or whatever it would cost. And you know, Vanessa, you would go to the theater to see it for $20. So, but if it was at $10, it's possible they would have gotten three rentals out of us in the same weekend. Because we were all kind of thinking the same thing.
A rental, you can't keep it.
Exactly. And so that's the other thing. Like, for me, if you're going to do $20 as a price point, I still think you have to, for a lot of films, for a movie like this, if you're going to do $20, that's got to be a rental. And then, like, a month from now, I should be able to own it for the same $20. Like, it should be a rental and then a purchase. Like, you get an automatic code, like, after a month or something, that adds it to your library. Like, I don't see that people are going to want to pay $20 just to rent a movie like that once. Some movies, yes, I think are you will be able to get away with that. But I do think they can't use blanket pricing the same way they use, you know, blanket ticket prices.
Right.
You know, and I think that's the same goes for theaters too. Like, I don't see why we're not doing like flex pricing and stuff like that with in theaters either. I mean, they do it in Broadway. I mean, Broadway, you know, theater, there's a set price, right, for their tickets. But like, you can go the same day and get, you know, tickets for discounts. You could also use codes and get discount tickets. So I think that there are, and there's different tiers of pricing. I don't think we don't necessarily have to have tiered pricing in movie theaters, but I do think eventually theater owners and theaters and studios will have to start to come to grips with like the idea that, you know, maybe you'll get more people into your theater to see a movie if the price is lower versus having.
God. I'm sorry. I just had this like vision of like tiered seating and the prices like you would on an airline. Like, oh, you know, rows H through D are like, you know, $1.50 more or $2.50 more, and then everything in the back and everything in the front is like cheap.
Or like a even like a theater, like a Broadway theater.
Yeah.
It would be the opposite concept though for that, because you're higher price tickets would be in the front row for Broadway, whereas in the theater, that's not what you want.
It's like that sweet spot.
Yeah.
Those middle sections where it's like just right for your peripheral vision, you know, just kind of floods everything.
It's possible that may be a thing one day.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Now you have to leave two seats between, you know, you and someone else.
Well, yeah, that's the new for now.
I cannot wait to see how you're going to try to recoup the cost between, you know, 30% capacity or something like that.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned it last week. We said that there the thing that's going to help that is the fact that there's going to be less movies. You're going to have like one or two films out at the same time. So you'll have entire theaters showing the same movie in every screen over and over again. So that'll make up for the, you know, less people per screen, but more people able to see it in a day.
And then depending on your state, right, you either have to have a mask on or not.
Yes.
But then what happens if someone is not adhering to the rules and they're interrupting? I feel like I'm most frustrated when my movie going experience is interrupted, whether it's by a cell phone light or someone eating popcorn behind me, and you know, and those are minor things. But what? I'm serious.
Wow, seriously, you bring popcorn to the movie theater? That's wrong.
No, but you know, some people chew really loudly, and if it's a very intense moment in the film or a very romantic moment in the film, and someone's chewing really loudly, you kind of like look at them like, "Hey, man."
What was the most offensive thing that's ever? That you guys have ever experienced in the theater that annoyed the shit out of you?
Oh God. I've already spoken, I think, about mine. Mine was the, one of my more recent experiences, which was my Hustlers experience.
Right.
I mentioned this. I told this story on the show when it happened. I don't remember how much detail I got into about it, but I mean, there was this guy, not a movie that I would have, gone to on my own. There was a reason why I was there, which is very irrelevant now. But there was a guy that was sitting next to me, of course, because, you know, why wouldn't he? Who was there basically just to see,
Two in the theater.
What's that?
I said the only two in the theater.
No. Oh, yeah, for the most part. And he was just, let's just say he got very excited when Cardi B came on the screen. And made it known that he was excited and just made his presence felt. And it was pretty. And then he was actually filming or taking pictures of the scenes where like Cardi B would be there. And when J-Lo was on the stripper pole, like he was recording that. And then he had like his headphones in. So he's then I think he just tuned out at one point, started listening to music. So it was not one of my best days, just in general, but that certainly didn't help. The end.
That's funny.
Yeah.
No, that's funny. But, I mean, I've had all of my bad experiences in theaters have been with food.
Yeah.
You know, one way or another. And I could just imagine that already people eating in the theater annoys me.
Yeah.
Depending on the level of sound and what you're crunching on, right? Especially if it's like a quiet moment. If it's like a blockbuster film, you don't hear it, it's fine. But if it's a very serious film and all of a sudden you hear crunching or people putting salad dressing on their salad because this has happened, and then they're putting, like, you know, the walnuts, and then they're talking, and then the cell phone light. I mean, it really just ruins everything. And now I'm thinking, if someone's sitting close to you or they don't have their mask on, there's going to be a Karen in there that's going to complain to the manager, right? Yeah. And that manager is probably not going to stop things. And then, like, if the movie stops, do you get your money back? Like, what happens? I think we're going to have instances of that. It's not a big deal, but I'm just using my imagination to imagine a different type of experience, you know?
Well, because we're horrible creatures. We, you know, I mean, it's just the truth. We just do, like, dumb shit. And there's always going to be someone who's like, yeah, I'm not listening to that, or I'm not following these rules or whatever. Yeah. So, and I'm coughing. So, you could totally see, to your point, you can envision this in your head. Some person's like sniffling and then like coughing. And all you hear is, you know, people sucking their teeth and looking around like, if this dude coughs in my direction one more time, I swear to God. And then you get the man, you know what I mean?
Well, you know what? I'm ordering some masks, actually, off of the website. So
off the merch store.
Nice. Off plug. The merch off the merch store. And this is not a plug or anything, but I'm gonna have that, and I'm gonna be enjoying my movie with the mask because I actually want to go. I really want to go. And I don't think their sanitizing methods are going to be, you know, top of the line. But I guess I'm willing to risk it.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest with you, after this conversation, and I'm not excited to go to movie theaters right now. And now about it, because I do think now that there's going to be more annoyances than I care to have, especially for the price. So yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much all about video on demand anyway.
The funny thing is, and I know people who are like itching to get back in the theater.
Yeah, but I don't think they're realizing, though, what it's going to... I think they have this idealized version that it's going to be like what it was. I don't know that they're necessarily thinking about... That's why, like me, like, I'm now listening to this thinking like, oh, crap, that's right. Like, the guy's not going to wear the mask, and then there's going to be a fight, and then there's going to be this, and it's like, then someone's not going to keep the proper distance, and that's going to be an issue, and then it's just like... Maybe, you know what, maybe the studios were smart to just say, next year, we'll be okay. Let's hope the vaccine is here, and then we don't have to worry about any of this stuff, because, man, I'm suddenly like, I'm hoping they release Wonder Woman 84 and video on demand at this point.
Sorry, Chris.
Just like,
sorry,
wow. Between that and Aaron hugging and cuddling Pete Davidson, like, this is messing me up, this whole experience right now.
Well, do you guys want to talk about, you know, DC fandom going virtual?
Speaking of being home, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is interesting. So
that's a first of its kind.
I mean, and now San Diego Comic-Con is actually going to do, like, it's not going to be a thing this year, but they are going to have, like, some panels that are going to stream, which is interesting. But now DC fandom, which is going to be August 22nd, which is interesting that it's actually taking place a week after Wonder Woman's original release date.
Probably why they bumped it.
Yep. And it's going to be a streaming event on, I guess, the website, which is, it's like, I forget what it is right now, DCFandom.com or something like that. And you'll be able to stream, like, all these panels, and it's going to... be for free. It's going to start at 10 a.m. Pacific time, which is 1 p.m. Eastern time. And it's going to have, like, they're going to highlight, like, all of the, like, Matt Reeves, the Batman, right? They're going to show James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. Love how all these movies have the in the title now. And then they're going to also tout Wonder Woman 84. And they're going to do things on Black Adam and Zack Snyder's Justice League and Aquaman, Shazam, it says, The Flash, also the TV stuff that they have.
The TV Flash?
Well, so that's what's interesting. It mentions, both actually, apparently. I'm not sure to what capacity, but
I'm still surprised. I'm sorry to about some of the stuff that's going on with them not even addressing Ezra Miller's attack.
Yeah, well, that story really kind of just, I guess,
it went
with everything going on. Like it up, yeah. So it was one of those things that really just kind of became forgotten about. But I think this is a great idea. The only thing that I find interesting is that they're doing it through this website, which nothing wrong with that, but like they have their own streaming service, DC Universe, and they have now HBO Max. You would think they would have figured out a way to incorporate it into those services as well. Huh. Like rather than making it like a website only thing.
Right.
Because like, why wouldn't you? Like, I mean, not that it's hard to watch it on your TV these days, like from a website, but like, why wouldn't you just have that built in to like, at least on DC Universe?
Do you think it's because it might be easier to track attendance or to collect data?
Probably. Yeah, I'm sure that's a big part of it. Yeah. But I just think it's, you know.
That's a good point, though. Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I just found it interesting. It's like you have your own streaming service and even a bigger streaming service on top of that you're affiliated with, and they would do it solely through the, at least for now anyway. They're doing it solely through the this website. But you're right. It probably is for marketing purposes. You know, you'll have to, like, register, I'm sure, or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great idea.
I'm really excited it's going to be free.
Yes. And I'm really excited about the fact that I feel like, again, always looking to the future, like, this could be the future here. Like, I know San Diego Comic-Con and New York Comic-Con, like, these are big events. It's a big deal. But, you know, really, the San Diego Comic-Con especially is really about the panels now. Like, there still is the convention floor and all of that stuff. But, like, whereas New York Comic-Con I still think is more about the convention floor. But, I mean, they do have panels now, too, and they get bigger every year. But,
yeah, I mean,
you know, yeah. I think that if you have access to those panels now, because it's in such hot demand, like, you know, right away you'd be getting people like bootlegging them on YouTube and showing all the footage and stuff like that, to just have it direct access to like everybody, I think is going to, it probably makes it'll be a major shift in, I think, how studios start to handle these types of things.
I mean, this is, yes, I mean, this is sort of no different than what Star Wars Celebration does. Most of the panels for Celebration were streamed, at least they have been. But I think, you know, sort of giving access where there was none before, and especially coming, you know, it's coming directly from the studio, right? So that's a huge thing. And then hopefully, you know, they can do those, you know, do some world premieres of new trailers and stuff like that versus, because what Celebration did was, because it was a live, you know, obviously an in-person live event, was that they had the panel and then they went dark during the moments of like releasing, I think it was Rogue One at the time. They had like a Rogue One trailer that dropped and they didn't show it to anyone that was online. They showed it to people in person. Obviously, it was like, oh, this is your like little treat for being here. So, you know, going full on virtual and you know, kind of giving that broader access, I think is a really exciting and cool thing. We'll see how the other studios or other organizations, you know, move forward with kind of doing these kinds of things.
Yeah. It also eliminates that burning desire for like people to go and try to like bootleg, you know, take a video of like the things on their cell phones and put it up, to have to release it. And then the studios feel pressure to wind up releasing the footage anyway.
They should be doing that shit anyways.
I know that. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, this makes sense. This made sense the whole time, you know, but it, I guess they feel like it, maybe it'll hurt the convention scene if like they start doing these types of events. Cause again, they really are more about the panels than they are about, well, it, more so San Diego, is more about the panels than the floor. So it's going to be interesting to see without a San Diego Comic-Con in its true form this year, and with studios starting to do these types of things, like, what does San Diego Comic-Con look like next year? You know, like, do studios, if this goes really, really well, right, for DC, like, do they just say, hey, well, why wouldn't we just do this every year?
Yeah, but I mean, at some point it's going to come down to money, right? Like, if you, because you're going to want to monetize access. So if it becomes,
well, like, but do they get, how does that work with, like, San Diego Comic-Con? I mean, as far as, like, who, like, if they do a panel at Comic-Con, do they, is that, they making money off of that?
No, but they're making money off of the tickets for attendance.
The studio is?
No, not the
studio. That's what I mean. So, like, if you're the studio, what do you care?
No, I mean, for them, you know, yeah, so it's free now, but who knows? Like, but you're saying, what does that mean for San Diego Comic-Con? Like, they don't even need San Diego Comic-Con anymore? Yes. Since they're doing their own thing?
Right.
Oh. Yes and no. I mean, Disney's had its own convention for quite some time, and they still would send Marvel up, but up until recently, they pulled out of, like, 2 years in a row, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're going to still have a presence, because, I mean, you would want to, regardless, but it, because it's still a target, a lot of your audience is going to be there in an event like that, but I'm saying, like, do they start to save, instead of doing these huge panels there and stuff like that? I mean, and there's something to having, like, the fans there and all of that stuff. I get it. But, and generating that buzz. But do they start incorporating things like this as well? It wouldn't necessarily even be for every year, right? Because sometimes you want San Diego Comic-Con almost to generate buzz for you. But for a year like this, where you have, like, the Batman you're rolling out stuff for, and you have Wonder Woman, you have
Zack Snyder's
Justice League and all this big stuff, like a Suicide Squad, like, this is a year where it's like, man, you know, you don't need anybody to build up the hype for that.
No.
Yeah.
And it's about time. Yeah. I mean, it's about time they start doing their own thing.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense. I think, yeah, it's cool. Listen, I'm all about it, and I actually saw a few of my friends talking about how, hey, this is exactly how I want to experience Comic-Con or things like this, right from my home. Like, this is one of those things where it's like, this isn't like this theater experience type thing, right? This is one of those things where it's like, I think a lot of people who don't really like crowds and having to wait on lines and stuff like that, it's not even a social thing for them. Like, they would rather be home. They would rather be able to watch this on their TV.
You know about that geek funk?
The geek funk. They're probably actually going to save more money, because I imagine that they're footing the bill for, you know, all the stars that are going to find their ways there, the hotels. I'm sure they're footing some sort of bill for all of the logistical, you know, stuff that they have to pay for, because they're going to a con. But now they can do it online, and all they have to pay for is, you know, web designers and all of the behind the scenes staff. And like we've seen with so many shows that the hosts have hosted, you know, from their house, right? The stars just kind of have to be on that Zoom chat.
Yes.
If they're doing a panel, and that's easy for them.
Yeah.
And they might not ask for compensation because it's easy for them. Or they might ask for a little something.
They can even do closed studio panels with everyone 6 feet apart from each other. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many options there. And you know, to your point about footing the bill, look, like, talent aside, to even participate in these conventions, it's thousands, tens of thousands, close to hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it. So, yeah, I mean, why foot the bill for stuff like that? That to a degree is sort of out of your control when it comes to, like, the logistic stuff, to now hosting it yourself. And if you're a studio, you've got the space, you've got studio space.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
That's going to be one of the things, that changes about society, I think, in general, is the shift that we've seen now, as people have seen how Zoom and, you know, teleconferencing and all of this stuff can affect how you hold meetings and offices and stuff like that. It's going to be bigger than just, like, this industry and that thing. Like, it's changing a lot economically. Like, you're seeing now, I think a lot of industries are seeing the economic advantages of, like, not having to pay for hotel rooms and flights and things like that to send people to things. I think you're going to start to see more of that in a lot of different industries. So I think that's part of the wave of the future.
Agree.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh,
what else?
I'm kind of sad about that.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I love Comic-Con. I love going to Comic-Con.
Me too.
Well, there's still going to be a need for it, but it might change, yeah.
But I'm not even going to lie to you. Like, I ain't going. I mean, even if they're like, oh, in October, we're going to do a limited capacity New York Comic-Con. I'm like, F that. I ain't going anywhere.
No one's going to that.
Even next year, I think I'd be suspect.
Why?
Because I know how the geeks get down, man. I know how they do.
We'll be fine next year.
Some of these people don't even have, like, any social awareness in general. You gotta add, you know, COVID on top of it.
I was listening to a podcast, Joe Rogan's podcast, actually. Yeah. And he was talking about how, like, guys don't like to wash their hands.
Yeah. That's a real thing.
Is that true?
It's not really, like, freaked me out. I didn't know that.
Guys don't like to wash their hands?
That's a real thing.
He was just generalizing, okay? He was making a big generalization about men in general and how, like, they don't like to wash their hands and that it's not cool during this time. And I was, like, working out, and I was like, oh, I didn't even know that was a thing. So, like, now every, like, guy I look at, I'm thinking that it's so weird.
Wow.
I'll
painfully admit that up until this point I wasn't a big hand washer either.
Wait, what?
Okay. Thank you for being honest.
No, define not a big hand washer. Like you didn't obsessively wash your hands, or you
hardly wash my hands.
But you went to the bathroom, you wash your hands, though, right?
If I went to the bathroom, I definitely would have been caught putting my fingers in my mouth after I'd gone to the bathroom and I would wash my hands.
What?
I'm not even joking, what is happening right now? My wife would be like, yo, why didn't you wash your hands? I'd be like, I should have washed my hands before I went to the bathroom. And she's like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I'm like,
Joe Rogan was saying that his younger daughter would be like, daddy, you didn't wash your hands. And he'll be like, oh yeah, that's right, I didn't. And like, she would remind him that's like something you have to do.
That's my life.
Now
it's like, sometimes, well, cause we're, you know, now we've obsessed over it. So my daughter will be like, daddy, I didn't hear your song. I'm like, oh, cause you know, you gotta sing a song for 20 seconds. While you're washing your hands. And then she'd be like, daddy, come over here. Let me smell your hands. It's because it's what we do to her. Make sure she's like the good smelling soap. So smell her hands.
So hold on. I'm struggling with this. Wait a minute. So now, so all this time, right, for the last few months, I've been saying, like, I don't understand. Like, I didn't need the coronavirus to tell me that I need to wash my hands when I get to the office after I've been on a New York subway, right? Or I didn't need somebody to tell me that I need to wash my hands after I go to the vice. So like you're, so this is like, I'm not in the normal, apparently. Is that the way this is working out? Like,
I mean, no, I don't know. I mean, we got to ask other people, but like, real talk, like, if I was on the subway station, I had no problem holding the bar and then not washing my hands when I got to the office.
Yeah,
in fact,
I have to.
Chris, I'm probably sure we shook hands after I used the bathroom and I didn't wash my hands.
Okay.
Okay.
So
the bathroom is a different thing for me. But I remember in the beginning of the outbreak, I just noticed how much I touched my freaking face, and it just made me realize how many objects I touch per day. And like, leave your phone and et cetera, and then put your phone on the table, and then you touch your face or you scratch your nose or like your eyebrows or whatever. And I just realized how much I touch my face without my hands being clean. Not necessarily from going to the bathroom, but like, you know, that was just one example that was given from someone else that I was listening to. But it really made me think about like men in general. wondering about that. So that was interesting.
Let me say, after this episode, I'm definitely never going to the movies with you ever again, and I may never leave the house ever again.
Dude, there's so many. I'm sorry, but and you know the thing is, like, and I judge. I'll be like, man, dirty as hell. What the hell's wrong with you? And I'm over here not washing my hands, right?
Yeah.
But I've gotten to the point now where I wash my hands so much, my hands cracked, my fingers, yeah, all of that stuff.
So I take back what I said before about the Hustlers experience being apparently my worst movie experience was the time I shook Aaron's hand. Anytime I shook Aaron's hand during a movie. So that's now my, that goes to the top of my list. You beat out the Cardi B guy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
God. Okay. So we had, I know Vanessa, you wanted to talk about like production and whatnot, starting up again. Because it's something that we talked about the last time we had you on, and the idea of like, what's it going to be like? Like when it does, and now you have some info.
Yeah. So it's not confirmed yet. Okay. But SAG-AFTRA submitted kind of like their guidelines to the governor of California to approve for starting up productions again. And I don't know why it's just to the governor of California, and I could be wrong about that, but one of the things that I saw on the list is that they are going to implement testing before, during, and sometimes in the case of recurring characters, right, after production. Which I think is a very big deal, because you're not talking about just monitoring temperature. You're talking about, maybe if I book a role in a film, I need to get tested before I start. I need to get tested while I'm on set. And then if I'm back for another day, I need to get tested again. You know, it's not just about monitoring symptoms. It's actual like testing. It's sticking that little thing down your nose, which makes me nervous because I'm prone to nosebleeds, and maybe that's why I'm a little apprehensive, you know, because the thought of it really scares me, and I haven't been tested yet. But that's one of the things that they want to implement going forward to ensure that they can open productions up safely. And of course, all the masks, you know, the gloves, the social distancing. Crafty table is going to be completely different how people handle food. You know, it's going to be closed. It's going to be safe. It's going to be individually packaged. It's not going to be open for everyone to just, you know, spread peanut butter on things. So reading that document was really interesting and also kind of sad, because you have to kind of accept this new reality. And the old reality was not so long ago, you know, and every time I think about the past, or every time I see a Facebook memory or an Instagram memory pop up, it almost feels like, oh, those were different times where we, and it's almost melancholic and like nostalgic to think about even just January or February of this year, which really just trips my mind. But moving forward, that's how SAG wants to run their productions. I've also received a lot of emails from SAG about like, don't for this production, because they're making people sign waivers, like COVID-19 waivers, that they won't sue the production if they contract the virus. And that's something that the union is not going to stand for. So there's been specific productions that have been flagged, and they email everyone that's a SAG member that says like, do not work for this production. And if you're working for this production, you are to cease work right now, because they're making you sign waivers that they don't want you to sign, or they're not taking the correct COVID-19 precautions that we want them to take. Now, if you're a non-union production, obviously none of that matters, but these are for like SAG-AFTRA productions. So I think that's going to be really interesting to when things start filming again. And like, I just can't imagine, like, you know what? I don't have much experience being on a big set. I have to be honest, but I've produced some things before, and controlling a set and mitigating all of that, you're going to need a lot more people, I think, to make all of those rules and regulations and make people feel safe. You know, at first it's going to feel really tense. But I guess that's depending where you are. So that's kind of the latest update on that. I'm not really thrilled about the testing portion. I think monitoring temperature and symptoms is something I'm more comfortable with. But that's what they're proposing right now. I don't know if that's amended, but that's what they're proposing right now.
That's crazy. So I'd imagine then, outside of more people, it would take more time, right? So to how quick, I mean, I don't know, because I haven't been tested either, but how quick do the results turn around for testing?
Depends on which test they're doing. Some are 48 hours, some are rapid. Okay. I mean, like, the depending on who has access to it. I mean, there's the rapid test, which is like what they're doing like at the White House, say, right? Where they, it's like a 15-minute thing, but the reliability isn't as great. The traditional one, the diagnostic test that most people are getting, which is that awful one that goes through your brain, that one I think is like up to 48 hours, I think, is the turnaround.
So, yeah. I mean, would they halt? Obviously, they'd have to, right? They're halting production?
Not necessarily, yeah. Because... No? Like, well, it's not... So this, what Vanessa just laid out is not much different from what a lot of, like... like, for instance, what, like, UFC had to do when they started running their events. And it's what AEW has done in wrestling. Unfortunately, it's what WWE wasn't doing, which has been a disaster. Well, I'm not even going to get into that.
I was just going to say, they haven't done that.
They haven't, and they just had somebody test positive that was in the audience at their last NXT taping. So they've had to literally shut down now their next 2 days of tapings because of that. But that's a whole nother conversation. But like the US Open, they just announced that the US Open tennis tournament is going to take place in Queens in its normal 2-week schedule without fans. But like the players and stuff are all going to have to be subjected to like a lot of testing and all of that stuff. So they don't shut everything down, but I think they're probably going to do what they do is you do the way you're probably going to do it is you have to do a test. I would think at least a couple of days before everything starts. Because then but you'll have the results by the time your production or event, whatever it would be, starts. And then you'll know. So, like, when UFC ran their first show, they had one of their fighters that were on the card wound up testing positive. So he didn't fight, clearly. But they did the test a couple days in advance. So, like, they knew that, like, a day before the show that he tested positive. So, like, you would have to do the testing a few days in advance, the initial testing. And then the nice thing, though, about some sets, like especially for the bigger productions, is, you know, people tend to be like you can quarantine somewhat easily. Like once everyone's there, then, you know, you should be pretty much good to go. But yeah, I mean, that's going to be the thing until there's a vaccine. That's just going to be the way that things are. You're going to have to be subjected to a lot of testing if you want to. And a lot of it is really just for them to be able to submit a plan. So that it can get approved, you know, so that they can at least say, well, you know, this is what we did. A lot of businesses need to submit plans in order for them to be allowed to reopen, and they have to, you know, sign off on it and sign off on a lot of paperwork, you know, to say that they're going to do the right thing. And that's where some of those liability clauses are starting to come into play. You know, because the whole point of submitting all of that, the planning and all that stuff, is to at least be able, so for governments and everything to say, like, well, look, they, you know, they agreed to do this, and if not, we're going to shut them down and all of that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, this is just going to be for now, you know, hopefully it's not going to last more than, you know, another 6 months to 10 months or whatever, but it's going to, the way things are going to have to be for now. People are going to just have to be cautious. So, yep. Boy, alrighty. So, Do we have anything else for today, or do we go to the announcement?
Yeah, I mean, just that there are a couple of big days for Batman this week. So,
oh, that's right. Yeah,
you know, Batman Begins celebrated its 15th anniversary, which I was like, damn,
that's
really?
So crazy. That's yeah. so crazy.
Holy shit! 15 years ago, that's wild. I remember when I went to go
years ago
try to see that movie. I was sitting in the aisle to go see it. I had to, which I don't see now. I'm looking back. God. That kind of reminds me of another moment where I didn't have a seat. Anyways, and I should have told you guys about my most annoying theater experience was when someone was ribbing me in the ribs the entire movie. No, it was actually when someone was eating Chinese food. But yeah, so that celebrated 15 years, and then Batman Forever, which definitely feels like it was ages ago,
yes.
celebrated its 25th anniversary.
That's wild. So Batman Begins, when I think back to where I was in my life, like when that movie opened, it actually feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
But it isn't. I mean, it's a long time ago, 15 years, but it actually, like, it's amazing. Like, when I think back to that time of my life, like, so much happened in that 15 years that it actually, in some ways, feels like it was... where I was in my life feels like it was a lot longer than 15 years ago, but that movie doesn't feel like it came out 15 years ago.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Not at all.
Yeah. And Batman Forever, I mean, that actually feels like it was 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For real. So, yeah, I mean, those were two huge milestones, and you know, I think one signified the end of, well, the impending doom of a franchise, and the other one was kicking one off. So, interesting that those happened 10 years
yeah.
apart from each other.
It depends on how you look at Batman Forever. Okay. Like, Batman Forever was either the beginning of the end, or some people may look at Batman Returns as the beginning of the end, only because the studio hit the panic button after Batman Returns, which is what led us to Batman Forever, and ultimately Batman and Robin. But it's interesting. I was watching Batman Forever a couple of weeks ago, and it's one of those movies that's like, nothing's as bad as Batman and Robin.
No.
And in a lot of ways, you know, Batman Forever is perfectly acceptable, especially compared to Batman and Robin. But
it's so good though.
There's just certain things I can't get past.
Hold on. What? Yeah, Batman Smiles, dude.
Wait, which is so good? Which movie?
Batman Forever.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, maybe because I love Jim Carrey.
It's very possible.
And I love the cast. And I remember, or maybe because I'm just tapping into like childhood memories of watching it and seeing certain things for the first time. And it was done so much better than the movies before it, you know? I don't know. I loved it.
Yeah, I don't hate Batman Forever. I have major issues with the villains because I detest Tommy Lee Jones's Two-Face. Just because I just really feel like Tommy Lee Jones didn't know the character, didn't bother to research the character, and just was like, they told him, just be like, you know, Jack Nicholson and everybody, like, be that as Two-Face. It's the same thing, really. And Jim Carrey is just, to me, he was just being Jim Carrey as the Riddler. Again, he was trying to be like more like the Joker than the Riddler, too. But, I mean, there's some good stuff in it. I mean, I don't mind Val Kilmer. I some of the stuff's okay. The Robin stuff, like, I like how they were fairly faithful to the Robin origin. It just was a shame that Robin was 48 years old in the movie, which is just weird. Like, again, it was like stunt casting because, like, at the time, like, those were all big actors, you know? So it was like, that's why they got the roles. Like, they weren't necessarily cast because they made sense in the role. You know, Chris O'Donnell could have been a fine, and was, you know, could have been a fine Robin, but, like, not if you're going to tell the origin story.
Oh, right. He was fine, all right. He was fine.
Yeah.
When you first laid eyes on him, he was
sure.
fine.
Sure, so...
But, you know, that was also during a time when we didn't take superhero movies.
Correct.
so seriously.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. It just wasn't a serious thing. And then you have Batman, you know, Begins, and gosh, that was like a first foray into true character, almost Joker like study. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Batman now, Begins was like, wow, this is, and despite the fact that Nolan really was following a lot of the Richard Donner Superman, the movie, yeah, blueprint for through how he laid out Batman Begins, but it was still so much more like grounded, even though I love Batman Begins for how Batman it is. And it's why deep down I, despite the amazing Heath Ledger stuff in The Dark Knight, I still watch Batman Begins more now than I watch The Dark Knight, but because it's such a Batman movie, but it still was so grounded and it was such a different take than we had seen before on the big screen. And it really ushered in like this new modern era of superhero films where we take them seriously and it sometimes too seriously, the way we analyze them. But yeah,
you got Christian Bale and he's a serious actor, and who knew he doesn't really have an American accent, you know?
Yeah. Not just Christian Bale. I mean, Gary Oldman and Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman. And I mean, it's just like, wait, what? Really? Wow.
That whole cast.
Yeah.
I still miss a Robin story, though.
Yeah. I mean, there's a great Robin story to be told. They just, I don't think we've seen it yet on the big screen.
And I think that's what we need to see. I think that's the next step.
Yeah, we, you know, it's funny, last week we were talking about,
I wonder when we're going to get that.
Yeah, we were talking last week about what the next steps would be, and we were talking about it in terms of, like, villains, right? The types of villains we haven't seen before. But yeah, I mean, the Robin thing, you know, I mean, we saw it with the Chris O'Donnell, you know, Robin, which, again, it was fairly faithful to the origin. It just, you know, the character's age was off. And it made it weird because it's like, well, this guy's an adult. Why does he need to be taken in by anybody? But yeah, and then we got whatever you call the John Blake thing in Dark Knight Rises, which was like a pseudo Robin. It wasn't the Robin origin or anything like that, but it was a kind of a pseudo, like a replacement for Robin, basically. So we haven't seen the true Robin origin story, whether we get the Dick Grayson version or the Tim Drake version or the Jason, like whatever origin we eventually get, which we will, I'm sure, at some point again for Robin on the big screen.
I don't want it to be an like a standalone origin, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on
Batman and Robin.
So you want them to already be a team.
Yeah.
Like when we start the movie.
Yes.
Okay.
We haven't seen that yet.
No, we haven't.
We've done all these standalone Batman movies, and, you know, there's another one that's going to come out, right? With
the Matt Reeves one with Robert Pattinson.
With Robert Pattinson, yeah. Who I just saw the other movie that he was in that was really good, Good Time.
Okay.
Good Time, was it? I've just been watching a lot of movies, but we're going to get yet another one, and I just feel like there needs to be either another element of his story, which let's see if we're going to get it in this one. But now I just feel like it's directors trying to one up each other instead of what other facets of this story can we explore? What other avenues can we highlight? And his relationship with Robin, I feel like, is so important that we just really haven't seen since 2005.
Yeah.
1995.
Huh?
1995. 1995.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was the last, right? That was 97, 95. Batman
and
Robin.
Batman and Robin was 98, yeah, right? But we didn't. But we saw the Robin origin.
But we
in
saw
95.
The Robin. Yeah. With
yeah. Oh
Donald,
yeah. I'm sorry.
In
2005.
But yeah. But
95. Yeah.
Since the Batman and Robin, yes. And we've seen little snippets of him, and that's a character I'm really interested in. But that's just me, you know? I'm interested in...
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're not alone. I think that there is going to be an audience that wants to see something new, like when it comes to Batman, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Like I we've gotten a lot of the same type of deal. And, you know, I know that, you know, this movie is, again, it's going to be another like grounded take or whatever, but like we've gotten that. I wouldn't mind, you know, seeing, me as a huge Batman fan would love to see them expand a little bit and give me something different. I think we can handle it at this point. Whether that's a you know, a Robin story, you know, regardless of which Robin it is, whether it's, you know, different villains, different stuff, they taking Batman into new directions. I think we're ready for that. I mean, in a world that has the MCU, in a world that has, you know, just gave us, you know, BVS and that type of stuff, over the top stuff. Like, I think we're prepared now. Like, I don't think everything needs to be grounded. And I get it. Look, Batman lends himself to that. But that doesn't mean that it all has to be purely that, you know, so don't.
Yeah, and I mean, that was the beauty of, you know, for what it was worth, you know, Snyder's DC Universe, because it was mixing, while Batman was sort of grounded, he was playing in a fantastical world, right?
Yes.
With metas and all of that.
Yeah. Well,
stuff.
Batman and inherently is going to be grounded when compared to like Superman or Wonder Woman, because he doesn't have any superpowers. Yeah, he's a guy gadgets.
Right. So, yeah. and there were you know, rough brushstrokes of Robin in those films.
Yes.
Because we get the tease of the Robin suit, which obviously is all the rage now, because I think Snyder had confirmed something related to that. He had maybe wanted to do something more with that. And then when you get your nightmare Batman scene in BVS, there was a female Robin that was in that. Was supposed to be in that scene, but her stuff got cut.
Like the Dark Knight Returns. Oh. Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I think it's time. I think it's time for a proper Robin, one way or the other. We'll see if that character gets woven into, you know, any of the three films that Matt Reeves is helming. But you know, that's coming soon.
Yeah, and it's funny because with spinoffs being all the rage now, like what we got with like Birds of Prey and stuff like that, like you would think that like Robin lends itself to expanding the universe, right? Because
yes,
you could
exactly.
tell the story of like you could go,
I mean,
if you
tried.
Yeah, you could go the direction of like Nightwing, and then, you know, you could have Dick Grayson start out, then he becomes Nightwing, then you have Tim Drake or whatever, and I mean, you got the whole, like, there's a lot of ways you could go with, like, Robins and, like, opening up an extra little, like, a whole Bat universe based on different characters. And I think that could work.
They've done it with Titans.
They have. But I'm talking, like, on the big screen, you know, with driving it. And I think that that's a route you could go. And see, that to me is how you want to develop that cinematic universe. Not so much where it tells one story over the course of like X amount of movies, but where you can have all of these characters that exist in the same universe, but they can tell their own different stories, have their own different feel and vibe depending on the characters and stuff like that, but they exist in the same world. So, you know, you can have a Batman movie and then that spins off into a Robin movie or whatever, and a Birds of Prey, and like all of this stuff spins off of each other, but it's all part of the same universe, but everything has a different feel, different look that fits the characters. I think that's the best way to go about it.
I actually would love to see like a Robin kind of like origin story movie kick off a trilogy where by the third movie he's teamed up with Batman, you know, and maybe there's other subsequent movies released around the same time for Batman's own story, but then they all kind of culminate into this third movie. So like each of their third, you know, trilogy kind of meets in the middle. That would be really cool.
There's a lot of different ways you could go with it.
You know.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, hopefully they start to explore a little bit more. Because I think that just like a lot of people are locked down, they're tired of being locked down. They're tired of being this, that, the other thing. I think eventually people are going to get tired of seeing, like, okay, this is another, like, grounded Batman story set, like, in a year one, year two universe. And, you know, like, eventually, like, you kind of been there, done that. And, you know, we've already seen it done really well. So I think that that will, people will probably eventually get a little fatigued by that. And, you know, that's why, you know, when you think back to where they were going with, like, the Affleck Batman and all that stuff, like, it was an interesting take because, you know, it was a Batman that had existed for a while and had kind of been there, done that, and seen a lot of things. And like, that would have been a nice way to introduce, like, Robin and stuff like that, and or different Robins. And, like, you could have really, I think, built a nice little universe off of that, like a sub-universe. I would like to see that type of a take maybe on Batman. You know, where our Batman, we introduced to a Batman that's lived a bit, you know, a Batman that's kind of been around. You know, we've already gotten like the introduction to like pre-Commissioner Jim Gordon and that stuff, which are great stories to tell, but you know, I don't know how much you want to see that on, you know, how many times you want to see that over and over again, like on the big screen.
Agreed. I'm kind of sick of Batman.
Well, let's not get carried away.
I think that's where that's.
I don't know that there's such a thing of sick of Batman, but that, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think that.
Tweet me.
Yeah, I think that that maybe did some new and fresh interpretations of some things. Yeah, that's probably in the cards for everybody.
That's not Batman.
That's not some new interpretation. That's not Batman. Like, there's yeah, that maybe gets us to Batman. Vanessa wants us to get to Batman in about 10 years, but let's build up from there first. Yeah. That's funny.
I blame the pandemic.
There's been a lot of Batman. We have gotten a lot of Batman.
For sure. Where's Superman?
Okay. Well, there's that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So that's, now I guess we're officially done. So now we can get
Wonder
into
Woman. Wonder Woman is here and she's going to save the world because she's a woman and we're just sick of men.
Yes. And then she'll forget all about it and
That's right.
wonder what happened to her life for 100 years. Oh, I hate that.
Well, you'll let me know. You guys can let me know how that movie is since I'm not going,
I'm not
to
going
see it.
To the theater, dude.
Yeah. After all this.
I'm not going. Are you kidding me? Like, you
what, for geez. Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I
You're
don't
not
think
going?
I don't think I'm ready for it yet.
Not even in October?
Well, I was ready, like, I was ready, like, an hour and 27 minutes ago, and now, like, I don't know, now I'm just you know what? I might not even go see, now I may not even go see The Batman when it comes out next year. The hell with it. And I'm definitely not going with Aaron, that's for sure.
No,
so,
no, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You shouldn't. Bring hand sanitizer.
Yeah, I'll bring hand sanitizer. Bring a power washer. Yeah. So, all right.
Hilarious.
Let's get ready to get out of here. So Aaron, would you like to do the announcement?
See, it's funny. I was going to have you to do it. I was going to have you do it.
Me? Okay.
Yeah, you.
All right.
Go for it.
So we promised an announcement, a big announcement regarding the future of this podcast. And that announcement is, and we've been teasing this now, I guess, for a few weeks, that going forward, Vanessa Bonteo will be a permanent co-host here on the Fanboy Garage.
Woo! Yeah! I hope you guys are all applauding. Who are listening?
Yeah.
Vanessa, some
I
words.
I hope everyone's listening.
Yes.
Oshri, yeah. Adam, I know some people have personally messaged me to ask if I was going to join, you know, another podcast or anything like that. So I really appreciate you guys for listening in and even inquiring, you know, at this time when everything is so chaotic and crazy. And I just love you guys, Aaron and Chris, for including me in something that I think is so worthwhile and so awesome. Despite everything that's going on. And I'm so happy to continue these conversations, you know, because that's what it's about. It's about having these conversations and connecting with people. And that's what I'm here to do. And I'm just really happy to be here. So thank you. I'm excited. Woohoo.
Yeah. And honestly, I think we're stoked. We're excited to have you as a permanent fixture of the show. I think your perspective, and we've said this, you know, offline, off mic, to you, that, you know, you bring a unique perspective. And I think everyone who's been listening to the show, we've had folks reach out to us and say, my gosh, it's awesome to hear Vanessa again and have her on the show. And, you know, we certainly appreciate you bringing your spunk and energy. And, you know, we're going to be looking forward to another 100 episodes and beyond with you in tow for the show. And yeah, I'm stoked. We've been holding on to this one for quite a while, folks. So we're glad that we get to finally share it with you all, and that Vanessa will be, you know, joining us regularly for shows. So yeah. Now that you have her here, as we've always said before, keep the conversations going. If there's things that you guys want to ask her, she has a, you know, a unique perspective. She has her ear very close to the industry itself, so she's going to be bringing that. And of course, all of the sort of random conversations we continue to spin for you guys every week. So once again, welcome, Vanessa. We're stoked.
Yeah. Awesome. And just to kind of put a little ribbon bow on this whole like 100th episode thing, you know, thanks to everyone who has supported us through these first 100 episodes. You know, people who've been listening, people who've been interacting, you know, those of us who've agreed with us, who have not agreed with us, you know, people who liked us, people who used to like us, you know, people who, you know, engage with us on the social medias, and all of that stuff. And, you know, who've been on the show, of course, as guests, you know, everybody who has touched a piece of this show, whether it's as a listener, as a guest, as a, you know, a supporter, anyone who's bought merchandise, you know, who's worn any of our merchandise for any reason, even in a picture or whatever, like everybody there, you know, has been a part of this and is the reason why where this is still going. And, you know, these last few months doing these shows every week, during this time, you know, has been really great for us. And it's really, helped, you know, us to hear from you, you know, everybody out there, and to see the interaction, because, it kind of allowed us to put a lot of things into perspective, gave us a reason to continue to do this every week, you know, even through all of this. So, you know, thank you to everyone. Of course you can still, go to thefanboygarage.com, check out the episodes, check out the merch store. Of course, those masks, we actually got our masks, you know, that we were going to try out this week or last couple weeks. And they're actually really cool. They're really high quality masks. So if anyone's looking for those face masks, you can still purchase those at the merch store. And of course, for every mask that's sold, TeePublic will donate a hospital grade surgical mask to a facility in need. So it's for a good cause as well. And of course, all the different designs we're going to be rolling out probably by the time you hear this episode, or maybe within a day or so later, we'll be rolling out a whole bunch of new designs, you know, to usher in the next 100 episodes and the new era of the Fanboy Garage. So be on the lookout for all that. It'll all be available. And of course, you can join the conversation on the social medias, the Twitter, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, at the Fanboy Garage. And you can maybe find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
I'm going to let Vanessa step in and tell everyone where she can find you.
Oh my God. You know what, guys? I have been taking a social media detox, a real big detox. Because the pandemic was affecting me, or actually not the pandemic, the stay at home was affecting me so much when I was alone. I'm not alone anymore, so I feel better. But you can find me at Vanessa Bontea, I think that's my Twitter, but I'm probably going to change my name. So by next episode, I think I will have a better, easier name. But Vanessa Bontea is the best place to find me, and probably Instagram as well. But I'll be on Twitter. And now that I'm with you guys, I will make sure that I have some sort of social media presence.
No worries. We'll be texting you if you're not around.
Great.
Cool. So, and you can find me on Twitter at @AARonSpeaks. That is @A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you so much for listening to our 100th episode. Thank you for those who've been with us from the very, very beginning. And I hope you guys are ready for another 100 episodes and more. And as Chris mentioned, lots of new things rolling out. So don't be shocked if you see some new things happening with the podcast. So thanks as always, and we'll catch you guys next week.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.